welcome everyone to another episode of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we have a great episode for you today. We're going to talk about some of the declined fourth-year options, go over some big injuries from the past few days, also talk about a three-team trade that appears to be dead for now, and then wrap things up with our crushes of the week. Before we get underway, wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find all of our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We would love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports, and for their NBA content at FanRag NBA. Joining me today, as always, are my two co-hosts, Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. How's it going, you two?
It's going well, Brian. I'm looking at Kyle Kuzma's stats, and I'm putting him up against Lonzo Ball, and I'm laughing.
There is nothing better than trolling Lakers fans by saying Kyle Kuzma is better than Lonzo Ball. I'm convinced of that. And we will talk Kuzma in a little bit, because the Lakers had a pretty notable injury this week. Sarah, how's it going with you?
Pretty well, thank you. I'm sore and trying to figure out why. It's like I've hit that age where it's like I didn't do anything. What happened? Why are my muscles hurting? But so that's disheartening. But other than that, I'm good.
Yeah, I went on a run Thursday, and I'm feeling it 2 days later, and I'm turning 30 in a month. So I'm thinking that this is really just the start of my body's immediate decline.
I'm just waiting for you guys to join the dark side here.
No,
you know, it's awful. I could barely move yesterday, and it was a 3 mile run. Like I've been doing all the time. I really don't know what happened. Before we get underway, I wanted to say, Mort, two episodes ago, at the end of the episode, you reviewed Thor Ragnarok, and you were not pleased with it. I went to go see it yesterday. I'm going to say we can never trust Morton's opinions on Marvel movies again. It was enjoyable. It is worth going to see.
Oh, come on. You didn't think it was just a little bit loaded with bad humor?
Yeah, it was like, there's no emotional connection, but I don't care. Like, it's a superhero movie.
That's where we differ, though. Like, that's you know, I mean, I don't go into, like, a superhero movie for laughs. That's not my prerogative. Like, I go into, buy into that whole superhero mentality. That's what I want. Like, I know what I'm going into with Deadpool. Like, that's laughs and stuff like that. The action is the secondary there. But for Thor, it was just, there's so many jokes were lame. And by the way, just before you crap on me too much, I did say people should go watch it because support of superhero movies is just a needed. But, you know,
except Americans, because it costs so much.
Right. Oh yeah, right. That really caught me off guard. I was very surprised.
I paid $13. It was well worth it.
Yeah, I mean,
for a matinee.
If you like bad humor, then good on you, Brian.
So clearly we're in the wrong business. We should be talking movies on this podcast. Really?
I actually just recorded a podcast about movies with two of my Danish friends. That was a dummy podcast, so it's not going to be online yet, but we're developing a Danish podcast where we talk about movies and TV shows and games and stuff like that. And we were like, hey, we should just record for like an hour, maybe an hour and 10. And when we wrapped up, it was like, oh, we just shot an hour and 55. So, yeah. There you go, Danes who are listening in. I'll be coming out with something soon, and it's going to be hella long.
Get excited for that. All right, let's turn our attention to basketball, I guess. We need to briefly shout out the one and only LeBron James. You know, there are a lot of questions, as Morten and I discussed on the last episode, about the Cavaliers. Then they went out and lost to the Pacers, four straight losses. Big nationally televised game against the Wizards on Friday. The Wizards, as they are wont to do, started talking trash and saying they're the best team in the East, they're not scared of the Cavs, blah, blah, blah. LeBron James responds with 57 points, 11 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks, 2 threes in 43 minutes. Shoots 23 of 34 from the field. The Cavs win 130 to 122. Just a reminder, LeBron James is still the best basketball player on the planet. We, you know, Russ is the reigning MVP. Kevin Durant's the reigning finals MVP. You both think Kawhi Leonard was the MVP last year. LeBron James is still the best player on the planet until further notice. I just, like, we should just appreciate him because, you know, he's turning 33, I believe, in December. Yeah. Like, this is not going to last forever. So, like,
Or is it?
Yeah, right. Unless he is actually a basketball robot, which I am not ruling out at this point. I just want to make sure we are giving credit where credit is due, because we don't know how long he's going to be able to do things like this. So, naturally, Skip Bayless somehow unbelievably found a way to poke fun at him still. He was like, funny how he shot two air balls late in that game. It's like, dude, shut up. Well, this shtick is so old.
Yeah, that's how he earns his money, and it's horrible. You know, a couple of episodes back, we went political. We started to talk about Trump and the whole Stephen Curry thing, and you guys asked me, like, are people across the pond laughing at Americans? No, I said no, but I am. We are all laughing at the way that you guys are consuming sports media, because that type of personality over here wouldn't fly, like, at all. That's just a non-starter. That guy would get ripped off the air because just for being an idiot all the way through. So that's one area where I've got to take that back and say, yeah, just rally America and decide as a unit to go against Skip Bayless and the likes of him to just enhance your media experience. You'd thank me later, I think.
I think we actually have, as Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated repeatedly tweets anytime Skip goes on one of these stupid LeBron tirades, he always tweets out
the ratings
tweet, and then the ratings of like bubble guppies or like an old movie on AMC, and they're always better than the Skip Bayless led Undisputed. So we have made that choice. Good job, America. Ignore that idiot.
That's right.
This is just, oh my god,
I forgot
just
about
wanted
that
to
one.
Get that off our chest. So we need to turn our attention, though, the big news of the week, the deadline, both or actually for fourth year contract options was on Tuesday on Halloween. There were actually a couple surprises in terms of players who did not get their options picked up. We mentioned one of them Tuesday in passing, just as a note that his option had not yet been picked up. Turns out the Philadelphia 76ers did not pick up Jahlil Okafor's fourth-year option. Orlando Magic did the same with Mario Hezonja, and the Milwaukee Bucks, more did your boy Rajad Vaughn dirty, also did not pick up his option. So
I get it. I still think he's good, though.
So we need to briefly talk about all three and figure out what's next for these guys. So let's start with Okafor. Sarah, I'm going to start with you here. First of all, let's assume Okafor, hypothetically, let's say he gets bought out. There was talk that his most likely landing spot is the Celtics. I know a lot of people would also like to see him end up on the Spurs, just because the Spurs have this unbelievable ability to turn anyone into a quality rotation player. Do you think, regardless of where he ends up, he has the potential to turn into that type of a player, or is it too far gone? Is he such a relic of the past that no matter where he goes, it's just not going to happen for him?
Well, I definitely think he has the potential to have a greater impact than what he's had in Philadelphia somewhere else. Obviously, it has a lot to do with opportunity. We've also discussed that, his style of play, there's a definite ceiling on what you can accomplish right now in the NBA with that style of play. But I could see him going somewhere. Of course, this idea may not fire him up, but to go somewhere and hopefully still get good minutes, but maybe be one of those guys we've pointed out before, like Monroe, who kind of can come off the bench and be a scorer in the post against these backups who he has his, that's his niche. He can kind of lead a second unit in scoring in that way. Hopefully get to a point where, maybe he's not going to be a fantastic rim protector ever, but kind of what Powell can do, where, as long as he kind of sticks near the rim and people come into him, he can maybe block a few shots. And that's really, I think, what you hope for. I don't think you want to put the projections up a lot higher than that, but I definitely think he could have an impact as a guy who gets, maybe 20 minutes a night off the bench, scoring in the post.
Yeah, I buy that too. I've said it before. You guys make fun of me because I have admittedly crapped on him a lot the last couple of years, but I do believe he could be a productive player. It just obviously is now officially not going to happen in Philadelphia. Mort, so I, you know, when the option got declined, every major sports website aside from Fox Sports, because they only have video now and don't have any written content, good job by you, Fox Sports, every other place that actually values writing immediately came out with a where should Okafor end up, who should trade for him, what should they give up. Do you think it makes sense for a team to trade for him?
Well, I mean, if it's a second rounder that you can afford to lose, then I wouldn't mind. Because here's the thing. A lot of teams wouldn't give up anything because they think, okay, we can get him in free agency next summer. But let's look at a list here. He's 21, or let me list something, I should say. He's 21 years old. He's averaging 14.7 points and 6 rebounds for his career in just 26 minutes. He's also over a block a game. I know his defense is bad, but at least there is a shot-blocking presence in him. His free-throw shooting has never been abysmal. It hasn't been down on DeAndre level, DeAndre Jordan levels. It's 67, 68, could easily improve up to becoming, 72, 75%, which means, theoretically, he could be in the game at the end of games. He's also somewhat efficient, scoring over 50% from the field. So there is an element of potential and production that goes hand-in-hand with this guy. Now, that's attractive for a lot of reasons. But if you have like four or five teams in the summer who are looking at that list and going, you know what, that checks a lot of boxes for us, so we are interested in this guy, then you're going to find yourself in not a major bidding war, because it's not going to be like huge contracts being thrown out, from right and left, but you are going to be in a bidding war nonetheless. Whereas if you trade for him now with a second rounder or whatever have you, and you give him minutes, and you tell, you kind of save him from this situation, and you put your trust into the fact that he can help you on the court, then I think he's the type of guy who's going to look you in the eye afterwards and say, thank you, I'm going to stick around. So I think there's merit to the idea of trading for him based on, the fact that you're actually saving him from something.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, obviously, it all depends on what a team would be willing to give up. I don't think the Sixers are not getting a first-round pick for him. I don't care what the protections are. It's not happening. That dream needs to die. In all likelihood, they would have to take salary back, which they do not want to do. So it's going to be hard to find a suitable trade for both sides. The reason I'm skeptical about a trade, even for a second-round pick, is a thing that ESPN's Bobby Marks has pointed out, among others. Any team that trades for him is limited to his paying what his option would have been. So $6.3 million as his starting salary next year. Yeah. So, Mort, I think there is merit to what you said about, giving him minutes this year might engender some loyalty and make him want to stay. And I don't think, I would be surprised if when he becomes a free agent, if he gets an offer in the $6.3 million range, so that might not be as restrictive as it sounds. But, that's another factor to consider, and that's frankly something that, further devalues him on the trade market. So, maybe the Sixers can get, a top 40 protected second-round pick, a pick that is guaranteed to be lower in the second round. I have a bad feeling that he's going to be rotting on the bench all year because they don't want to buy him out. They don't want him to go, especially to Boston, a team that they're going to be, competing with in the Atlantic Division and the Eastern Conference both this year and in years to come. So if they could somehow make him promise he wasn't going to go, if they could promise he was going to the Spurs or going to the Western Conference, maybe they'd buy him out. But I don't know. I have a bad feeling that he's going to spend this year mostly on the bench just as an absolute insurance policy in case Embiid suffers another long-term injury.
There are a couple of ways to get around the contractual issues, though. Let's say you're a team who's going to be under the cap next summer. Then you could renounce him and re-sign him to a larger value.
Can you?
I'm pretty sure that you can renounce him. I think it's because you have his rights that you are limited. Mm. Then you could renounce him and sign him with raw cap space. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty certain that's allowed.
Mm. I mean, again, regardless, I don't think he's going to get $6.3 million as a starting salary. So,
and if some team does offer something ridiculous,
yeah,
you know, then that's the thing. If you then just offered up a second rounder, then you can sort of live with that. You can live with losing that if push came to shove. So yeah, the first round draft pick talk, as you said, that's dead and gone. And the idea that you would get like a productive young guy as well, no, dead and buried. So it's gonna be like before we started recording, you mentioned one of those a fake second rounder, a top 55 protected pick, and then you know maybe rights to guys who never come over, something like that. But I am pretty sure you can get around it contractually in some capacity.
Yeah, right. We all know that Brian Colangelo likes fake draft picks, so maybe he would be down for that again.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move to Mario Hezonja, another guy, a fellow top five draft pick in the 2015 class. He just has not seemed to find his footing in Orlando. So, Sarah, I'm going to ask you the same question about Hezonja as I did with Okafor. Do you think the ship has sailed on him, or do you think he could be productive elsewhere?
I think Hezonja is a really interesting guy. There's a potential, possibly stretch big or, you know, small forward who I think I'd like to see him at the four, but there's somebody there who, you know, he can hit the three. It's just, he just hasn't had a lot of minutes, you know. Both he and Rashad Vaughn, who we'll talk about in a minute, are guys who have potential, but they make sense as guys whose options were declined simply because where they are, their minutes have dropped each of the last 3 years. So, you know, I'd love to see both of them move on to somewhere where they can hopefully get an opportunity to show what they can do. A thing you hope is that their development hasn't been dormant just because their playing time has dwindled. I don't know, you know, how much they've been able to carry on and add to their games, but hopefully they have, and when they get a chance, they can show it.
Yeah, I mean, super small sample, but he's 7 from 13 from three-point mm-hmm. range this year, so, like, he can hit the three. As you said, I think at least playing him at the four sometimes would be really interesting, but... Mm-hmm. For once, the Magic are actually letting Aaron Gordon play in the four, so...
Which is good.
Right. Yeah. If we're doing that trade-off, I'd rather see Aaron Gordon get those minutes full-time. That's fine. Just let Hezonja go. Mort, is there any team that jumps out at you that could really use a guy like Hezonja next year?
I mean, we're only going off the way rosters are currently constructed, and I have to say the Bulls, because they have probably the weakest small forward rotation in the league. And they could use some athleticism and size. Right now, they're starting 6'4" David Nwaba at the three. He's done well, admittedly, but that's not a long term solution. And otherwise, it's Paul Sipser, who is just the polar opposite of athletic. so I think that would be a team that's interesting because they're still on the rise. They wanna. Or not on the rise, but right now they're going down, but they want to be on the rise. Right. And then they are trying to rebuild, so they're gonna need some young talent to kind of fit in with the whole Lauri Markkanen era. So that would make a lot of sense to me, that Hezonja lands in a spot where he would get minutes and where the key focus is development. However, my personal preference would be the Spurs. I would love to see Hezonja, especially. Like, we're talking about Jahlil Okafor for San Antonio, but Hezonja is, like, my guy for the Spurs. Athletic, can shoot, is not American, which Pop loves. Well, I mean, let's be honest. Like, if Pop hears about, you know, two players who are basically equal, but one is American and another one is, like, French or whatever... He's going to go the other route. He just is. That's just his way of doing things. And Mario, I think, would just fit in so well with the Spurs, especially because of his youth and athleticism, which they have needed for a while. And Sarah's idea of playing him as a small ball four, I'm in love with that idea. That would work so well.
Yeah. Basically, I feel like any player who needs a fresh start, the Spurs,
yeah.
or, I mean, frankly, the Celtics are going to be in that list, too, with Brad Stevens there. But I think the bottom line for all three of these guys, and we'll talk about Rashad in a minute, you need opportunity and you need good coaching more than anything else. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, in Orlando and for Okafor and Philly, like, they just didn't have the opportunity because they were so log-jammed positionally. You know, like, the Pelicans could make sense because they also have a pretty weak wing rotation. And then Boogie, who knows if he's going to be there past this year. But, you know, I don't know. We also don't know if Alvin Gentry is going to be there past this year. So it's harder to project whether Hezonja would be a fit moving forward. That said, him next to Anthony Davis could be really interesting. I also, you know, like, the Brooklyn Nets just always are on the hunt for young talent, especially you know, former lottery guys. It's working out pretty well for them with D'Angelo Russell so far. I could see him fitting in there and having a chance to actually compete, because I think Damari Carroll will only have one more year on his deal after this, and he could kind of slide into a similar role. You know, I think for all three of these guys, I wouldn't call any of them like lost causes. I think each of them have the opportunity to make a long NBA career still. It's just they ended up on the wrong teams at the wrong times. So, Sarah, let's move on to Rashad Vaughn. Milwaukee, again, declined his option, so he'll be a free agent next year. Are there any teams that stand out as good fits for him?
I haven't really thought about it, so I probably will throw this to Morton here in a second. Who needs a shooting guard?
Everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. Except Milwaukee.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I want Rashad Vaughn on Atlanta.
Ooh.
Under Coach Bud. I think that would make a lot of sense, because right now Kent Bazemore and Marco Bellinelli are sharing, you know, that position. Bazemore offensively has just been, he's really struggled. Especially from deep as well. I think Atlanta as well, were trying to build something up anew and trying to go a little bit younger. They could use a guy who is just a zone breaker like Rashad Vaughn, and coming in under Coach Bud again, who just comes from the Spurs coaching tree and everything. I just think he would benefit so greatly from it. So the Hawks is the team that I'm looking for Rashad Vaughn specifically, but like you guys said, shooting guards. I mean, who can't use the shooting guards these days? It's just a position that is have become a little bit obsolete because you're just playing big point guards primarily as the two nowadays.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I love the Atlanta fit. I was thinking Dallas, we don't know what's happening with Seth Curry after this year, so that could be a spot.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
And under Rick Carlisle, I know his history with younger guys is not pristine, but, you know, hopefully getting a shooter off the bench behind Wes Matthews or if they re-sign Seth Curry, and putting him next to Dennis Smith Jr. could be really interesting. Phoenix, too, maybe? Like, they're clearly pivoting into a youth movement. You're not supplanting Devin Booker in the starting lineup, or having Rashad come off the bench could be pretty interesting, especially that, you know, expectations are not going to be super high for this Phoenix team for the next couple years, despite their sudden resurgence this year. So that there's at least a potential fit there. I guess the Knicks too, but I don't want to do that to anyone. So on paper, it would be a fit, but I hope Rashad finds a better home than that.
Yeah.
All right, let's move into the two big injury notes of the week. The first is that Tristan Thompson is going to be out for about a month with a left calf injury, according to Shams Charania of The Vertical. He suffered it Wednesday against Indiana. You know, again, the early returns, as we mentioned at the top of the podcast, it took a 57-point wonderkid performance from LeBron to have the Cavs beat the Warriors, and they still only beat them by 8 points. So Sarah, Mort and I talked in depth last episode about kind of the Cavs' struggles and what they could do, especially to turn around their terrible defense. Now Tristan Thompson, their best rim protector, is out for the next month. What do you expect for this Cavs team while Tristan is out? Is it just going to be, do they basically have to do the Rockets plan of, like, we can't defend you, so we're just going to have to outscore you every night?
Yeah, that's kind of it. I was thinking, too, LeBron had 57 last night. Perhaps LeBron's going to have 50 a lot more often. It's not great. Yeah, that's the thing. I was thinking it really stinks for Tristan and for the Cavs, but at the same time, it's like, you know, yeah, he's one of their only guys who can sort of protect the rim a little bit, but it wasn't good to begin with. And yeah, it's going to get worse, but how much worse can it get at this point? You know, this is a horrible metaphor, but it's kind of like if you put a wet paper towel over a colander. So, like, it would hold out sugar and flour and stuff like that. But now they've lost the wet paper towel, so it's just everything's getting through the holes. So, yeah, it's going to be tough. I think, you know, they're lucky they have LeBron. That's always true of anybody who has LeBron on their team. Pretty much play him at all positions. Try to throw him at the five, throw him at the one. He pretty much has to do it all, but that's always been the case. Maybe it's more true now than it has been over the last couple of years, but man. Yeah, I mean, their defense isn't going to be great. I don't want to call it a lost cause, but there aren't a lot of fixes internally at this point. So, yeah, focus on your offense, I guess. Try to help each other as much as possible on the defensive end.
Yeah, when we recorded, I believe it was Tuesday, right after we finished recording, we found out that the Cavs had one of their, like, patented team meetings where they all had a big, you know, they let everything out in the open, and then they got pounded by the Pacers the next night. So the win against the Wizards was a good sign in some regard, but as you said, Sarah, it might just take a bunch of 40 and 50 point nights for LeBron to keep this team afloat over the next month while Tristan is out, because, you know, they started with the Kevin Love at the five, Jay Crowder at the four thing. They abandoned that very quickly, moved Tristan back into the starting lineup. Against the Wizards, they had to go back to that original starting five. Luckily, their schedule over the next month or so is not, it could be a lot worse. They have games against the Knicks, the Mavericks, Atlanta, Brooklyn. I'm so used to saying Philly is a walkover, but I guess they're actually competitive now. Same with Detroit. But, like, they aren't playing, aside from Houston and the Clippers, I guess, they aren't playing, like, the Warriors, the Spurs, you know, any of their, like, really tough top contenders. So they have an opportunity to get things at least a little bit tightened up. It looks like they don't have any back-to-backs. At the end of the month, they do. But they'll have a good amount of rest, which is good for an old team, the oldest team in the NBA. So I'm not saying it's time to completely panic about the Cavs. But more, last time we spoke, we debated whether they should be dangling that Brooklyn pick in trade talks. Does the Tristan injury make you change your stance at all?
I wouldn't make a you know, an injury that's going to last a month the determining factor in moving a first-round draft pick. Because that's not, like, that's just a time, you know, poorly timed injury, and it's going to last for a month, and that's about it. But, you know, trading a first-round draft pick will have ramifications, you know, for years and years and years. I think that LeBron's 57-pointer was a sign of the fact that, you know, we were kind of right in going the whole Houston route. Mm-hmm. You know, that's probably what they have to do. I mean, just look, we're kind of forgetting Washington scored 122.
Right.
It took Cleveland 130 to get that win, you know?
Yeah.
And that has to be the prerogative now. It has to go, we have to go outscore teams. Like, we have to go on the offensive. We have to get, you know, a shit ton of threes. We have to get to the line a lot. We have to put teams into, you know, the penalty very early, and all these things, because how do you fix it? Like we discussed the last time, you don't fix the defensive problem internally. You only fix it externally. And even when Tristan Thompson comes back, it's still going to be a problem. So my feelings about moving that pick hasn't changed. If you get a difference maker, sure, go for it, and then see if that gives you like one last shot at maybe retaining LeBron after this year, like one last attempt. But if you don't find a proper market for it, and you kind of determine, you know what, it's just not worth it, then don't.
Yeah, I think that's where I stand too, and I just don't know. I mean, there could be someone dangling on the trade market that we don't know about. Like, hell, maybe DeMarcus Cousins is available with that Brooklyn pick, in which case, why not? Because LeBron's probably going to leave anyway. But I just don't know what type of rim protector is available otherwise. Like, no, there's no Eric Bledsoe being dangled out there for big men. So,
especially work on your smaller lineups too. Like, see what you have there, because the league is so crazy right now. Something that's wreaking a lot of havoc is, like, you know, these teams that are young that we thought were not going to be good are having some success, like the Pacers and the Magic, with, you know, popping their big guys out to the three-point line. And just watching the last few Spurs games on their road trip, it's like LaMarcus is dropping back because that's what they've always done. And not thinking that he needs to jump out on Vucevic like he's Steph Curry. But, you know, teams are burning them that way. So it's definitely there. I think the Cavs, yeah, it hurts. You still need a rim protector. But, you know, maybe see what you have in a smaller lineup and see if you can guard some of these pop-outs. And then, you know, yeah, teams will probably adjust by going back into the middle on you. But just look at what you have, because that is another way that teams are attacking a lot more now.
Would you guys start LeBron at center?
So it would be Derrick Rose, J.R. Smith, Crowder.
Yeah.
Who's the fifth?
Love at the four, and then LeBron as like a straight up center.
Oh, like, because just for defensive purposes?
For defensive purposes, simply because when you look at the center of the league today, a lot of those guys aren't going to, you know, bruise and bang him underneath the basket. They're not going to just physically exhaust him. Most of these guys are like face-up players who are, you know, setting picks and getting spot ops. Like, he's not going to be that type of guy who's going to be burned by a lot of centers. Like, he can leave a guy and come over from the weak side, whatever, and help. I'm kind of curious to see LeBron in that center role.
Yeah, if it's potentially a way to get him playing like free safety, like you said, where you can kind of roam and help, it's not a bad idea.
That would definitely be the end goal of, that he could roam free,
I just don't know if you want to put that much wear and tear on him this early into the regular season. Like, if it was the playoffs, I'd be more amenable to that, but like... What
is it putting a lot of wear and tear, considering that he'll be guarding centers for the most?
Yeah, like, imagine him against Joel Embiid.
Well, okay, so there are a couple games.
Yeah,
sure.
Don't do that.
Right. Like Andre Drummond, Hassan Whiteside, Enes Kanter, even.
Yeah, I'm not really concerned about the Enes Kanter types. Yeah, like, I get the Boogie stuff and the Embiid stuff. Even Hassan Whiteside, not really. I mean, he's not like a natural scorer, and I do think a lot of those guys, if they see LeBron down there, they're still gonna be like, "Oh, I'm gonna think twice," because LeBron, at least we forget, is strong as hell.
Yeah, but like a Marc Gasol, I feel like he would just
twice a year.
Yeah, I think it would be an option for them to consider, but also. Part of the Cavs, I mean, the regular season doesn't really matter for the Cavs. They're going to make the playoffs. So, like, part of it is just figuring out lineups and combinations that work. And I feel like at this point in the season, they probably want more experience with this Rose, Smith, LeBron, Crowder, Love starting five. They want to see how Love functions as a center more. Like, they abandoned it very quickly. But now they're kind of going to be forced into trying it more. So I think, you know, given the relative weakness of their upcoming schedule, that gives them the perfect opportunity. Like, you know, against against in Atlanta. Like, I don't think you're that worried about Dwayne Dedman. So maybe, you know, I don't think Kevin Love is not going to hemorrhage 30 points to Dwayne Dedman. Against Milwaukee, like, Thonmaker, you're not too concerned about him. Dallas, Nerlens Noel is not going to put up 30. So that actually, their upcoming schedule is very friendly in that regard. I'd say the first, you know, they have Capella, but he's not a traditional post-up big. Like, the first really concerning matchup for their poor purposes, Charlotte on the 15th, and then the Clippers. Yeah, with Joy. And then, yeah, they have a three-game against Charlotte, Clippers, Pistons. So you have Dwight, DeAndre, Drummond. But aside from that, like, yeah, you get Charlotte and Philly and Miami at the end of the month. But then Brooklyn, you're not really... Who are you? Mozgov? You don't really care about... Like, Mozgov is not going to light up Kevin Love.
He's shooting threes now.
Yeah, I know. He's playing like 15 minutes a game because he's still a corpse. All right, let's move on to the other big injury of the week. It is Larry Nance. He is out 4 to 6 weeks with a fractured left hand, according to Adrian Wojnarowski. Sarah, I'm going to throw this one to you, given that you're both our big man expert and our Western Conference expert, and the Lakers had a plethora of bigs anyway. But, so they, you know, this shouldn't affect them as much as it would a team with no front court depth, but how do you see this affecting the Lakers for the next month?
Y'all know how I feel about Larry Nance Jr., so
I do.
It bums me out for sure, but like you said, I mean, they have options. They've got Lopez, they've got Randall, and maybe, and I think pretty likely, we see more Kuzma. Mm-hmm. So, hey, that's exciting. I'm sure Lakers fans, while they also love Nance, are probably excited about the prospect of more coups, so it's not a bad thing to throw him in a little more. He's definitely earned minutes. You don't want to see Nance go down, but I mean, Kuzma deserves to be out there.
Yeah, I mean, in their first game without Nance, Kuzma moved into the starting lineup, played 39 minutes, had 21 points and 13 rebounds in a win against the Nets in the revenge, the D'Angelo Russell revenge game that did not go as planned. I want to ask you about Julius Randle, because it seems like he started to find his niche off the bench, but the first couple games of the season, he was really, like, visibly, body language-wise, did not seem all that engaged. You know, now that Nance is out, he'll have more of a chance to impact the game off the bench, in theory, but even in that win against the Nets on Friday night, he only played 16 minutes.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about him moving forward? Do you think he's like, do you think part of his disengagement is, you know, everything surrounding him? He's in a contract year. He knows the Lakers' grand plans for 2018 with the two max free agents. And if that comes to fruition, that means he's out of there.
I think so. He seems to be playing very frustrated. He's just, he's reaching, he's picking up a lot of dumb fouls.
Mm.
And whether that's demotion or whether that's the uncertainty of his future in Los Angeles, I'm not sure. But it does. I expected him actually to come out way more aggressive, especially considering the weight loss and everything. He seemed so dedicated over the summer, so I've been kind of surprised that he seemed a little bit passive and, well, frustrated out there. I thought he was going to come in and, you know, go, I'm going to show them. And instead, it's been sort of an up and down ride for him. But yeah, I do think he sees the writing on the wall. And even if they don't get, you know, a Paul George or LeBron James next season, I do suspect that the Lakers have poisoned that relationship to an extent that Randle might want out. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's an interesting thing overall, because we always talk about, you know, what players should go where and why, and the media is very focused on upcoming free agents. We rarely talk about those guys that are there, that are listening to all that, and who ends up getting, you know, affected by it. Now we're seeing Julius Randle. We're seeing Jahlil Okafor feeling his whole career has just been messed up because, oh, we need someone better at the five or four, and then Joel Embiid come back, and he's dominating everything, and yada, yada, yada. I think we're seeing a lot of these young guys who are getting sacrificed a little bit, and Randall is no exception. I would be very surprised if he's not traded at the deadline. I predicted that previously. He's not a Laker next year.
Yeah. One way or the other, it seems like he is out, because they'll have, I guess Nance will be going into his fourth year, so they'll still have him under contract in 2018-19. Kuzma's a rookie, so they have him locked up for a while. Like, they have, regardless of what happens this upcoming summer, they have power forward pretty well set without Randall. Sorry. So, like, in theory, this Nance injury gives Randall a glorious opportunity to make a big impact off the bench and boost his trade value, and like, maybe he finds his way out of LA near the trade deadline, and he gets the opportunity to really start flashing before he hits restricted free agency. Because right now it's tough. Yeah, I think you're right, Mort. Like, it does feel, and I said this to a Lakers fan, they totally disagreed with me, but it feels very similar to the Philly front court situation for the past few years, like, where they had just too many guys, all of whom were, you know, whether they were deserving of minutes or not, they all felt that they were. So there's only so many minutes to go around, especially when Nance comes back. It's, you know, it's something to keep an eye on with Randall moving forward.
I mean, Brook Lopez, their best player at this point, is playing just under 25 minutes a game.
Yeah.
That alone, I'm just going to present that with Art.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, he was struggling for the first couple of games. Like, the last two or three, he's really gotten loose. He had 34-10 against the Nets on Friday. But before his last two or three games, like, he just didn't play that much, and he wasn't making a huge impact. This Lakers team, they're better than, they're not going to be the worst team in the league. I'll say that much. They'll be like a 30-ish win team. I guess briefly address Lonzo Ball as well, because he, aside from that game against the Suns, where they just didn't play defense at all, he's been awful. Like, he's been really, truly struggling. And, yeah, you know, he had a plus 22 last night despite shooting 3 of 15 from the floor. I think he went 0 of 2 the night before. Like, he just hasn't been putting up big offensive numbers. Sarah, are you concerned about Lonzo moving forward? Do you think this, like, should Lakers fans be panicking that he's off to a slow start?
I'm not really concerned. I mean, when you asked me about him, I think last week I told y'all, like, this is how it's going to be. You know, it's going to be up and down. Of course, it's been more down than up so far. But, you know, the shot is a problem, legitimately. And more so than that, I mean, I think I've seen quotes coming out from Kuzma and others that they want him to be more aggressive. So, I mean, you know, that might be a bit of a problem, too, mentality. But, I mean, he is who he is. Hopefully eventually they get to work on that shot, but they're not going to fix it, you know, this year. Mm-hmm. So if they do at all, so they're going to just have to deal with the fact that that is going to be really volatile. Sometimes it's going to go down. Sometimes it's going to hit nothing but backboard. You know, that is what it is. Hopefully he can still find ways to get into the teeth of the defense and use his best skill, which is his passing. It is difficult because, you know, you kind of need to be more of a scoring threat in order to make people, you know, bite on you so that you can get your teammates open. But, you know, and it's a different situation in Philly with Ben Simmons because, you know, he gets the ball on the break and he's large coming at people. You know, it's easier for him to suck in the defenses. But I still think that Lonzo can have a positive impact on the team. But it is going to be up and down. They're going to have to deal with growing pains. I don't think that's unexpected.
Yeah, I'm right with you. I mean, I said it at the top of the podcast. It's really fun to troll Lakers fans, especially in saying like Kuzma is better than Ball, because they get really defensive very quickly. I just like you guys know how I feel about his father. There's a reason I call him Voldemort, and we do not say his name on this podcast. He built up these unrealistic expectations, fair or not, So for Lonzo to be falling short, you know, I don't think he would be attracting this much attention if not for Voldemort's comments. That said, name the, like, I was trying to look at this the other night. Who's the last rookie point guard who put up good numbers as a rookie? I'm not counting Ben Simmons because he's A, like, a 6'10 point guard, and B, missed his entire first year. So he, like, had a year to get up to speed with the game and get acclimated to the NBA lifestyle.
John Wall?
I was going to say Michael Carter Williams. Right. But, like, has there been someone since then?
Not off the top of my head, no. And I wouldn't even put MCW in that conversation, but that's because, you know, the narrative changed.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that's kind of my point, is like, MCW, you know, we've had 4 years of rookie point guards since MCW. No one has put up what one would consider good numbers, and then look at what happened to MCW's career. So, like, for all of these guys to be slow starters, and, you know, like, Lonzo started slow, Fultz, we've talked about before with the shoulder injury, so we can't really get a good, like, a sample of him. But, I mean, Dennis Smith, like, flying under the radar, but he's shooting less than 39% from the floor. Frank Ntilikina, 31.3%. Mm-hmm. De'Aaron Fox is playing well, but that's because he's coming off the bench. Like, when he, in his one start, he was awful. Like, this is just what happens. Rookie point guards struggle. Unless, you know, they're surrounded by incredible teammates, or they're just in a up-tempo system that is built for them to take 20 shots a game, like MCW back in his rookie year. Like, I don't think it's time to panic for any of these guys, because this is just part of the growing curve for NBA rookie point guards. It's just, this happens. It's fine. Like, we should have expected this. And just because his father was bloviating on First Take at ESPN and Undisputed about how great his kid is and how he's better than Steph Curry already, like, anyone who bought into that hype is dumb. He wasn't. And we all knew that. So why are we panicking 9 games into his career when he's shooting 30% of the field? Like, we knew his shot. Going into the draft, his shot was the question mark. Like, we all knew it was ugly as hell, and it went in a relatively small sample at UCLA for one season. We knew against NBA defenders he would have a harder time getting it off. Look what's happened. Like, nothing. He's a great passer. Like, that's already come to fruition.
Great rebounder. NBA too.
Yeah, like, he's a triple-double threat. Yeah, he has not had one yet, let it be noted. Meanwhile, Ben Simmons has two of them. But, like, he's going to be fine. He's, you know, I'm not panicking about him yet, but don't let any Lakers fans listen to this podcast, because I want to troll them more on Twitter.
I saw I don't remember who put it up, if it was a Lakers fan or someone trolling Lakers fans. It was like, Kobe had his 81 points in just under 42 minutes a game, and Lonzo is at 79 points for the season, and he's played 295. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, you're comparing a guy to, like, a Hall of Famer who was in the prime of his career doing ungodly things. Like, why would you use Kobe's 81-pointer to compare anything?
Right.
Like, it's like, don't. Just give the guy some space. But yeah, like, we all know that Voldemort kind of just ruined his opening season here for his son. And I'm looking forward to Lonzo in year 3 and 4.
Yeah.
Seeing what type of player he's gonna be. I'm still skeptical as hell. Especially, you know, that jumper, the fact that he just can't go right and take, you know, a jump shot off the right and the low release point and everything. I don't think he's going to be like a natural scorer at any point in his career, but, you know, writing him off is just ridiculous. Like, the opening comment I made in the podcast was just like for fun, and that was more of a compliment to Kyle Kuzma than anything, because Kyle Kuzma is balling.
He is. Yeah. There, it's undeniable that through 9 games, Kyle Kuzma has been the better NBA player, but Lonzo Ball still has a higher ceiling. He's like,
and good for the Lakers. Younger.
Yeah, like, good for the Lakers for finding Kyle Kuzma late in the first round. Like, that, both him and Larry Nance, they got late in the first round, and both of those guys look like legit NBA rotation players. So, like, kudos to the Lakers scouting staff for nailing those picks. Those were both great. But I just wanted to give a spirited Brittany fan defense of the rookie point guards here.
Well, you didn't cry.
Yeah. Leave Lonzo alone. No, just wait. It's only because Markel is out with his shoulder injury. If he was actually playing through it, I definitely would have broken down in tears today. All right, let's move on to something that Sports Illustrated's Jake Fisher reported this week. Apparently, the Suns, you know, they've shown life since firing Earl Watson and telling Eric Bledsoe to go home after his quote-unquote hair salon experience. They were, you know, we haven't heard much on the trade front since then. Ryan McDonough, their GM, said, you know, basically whenever the timeline presents itself, we're not in a huge rush. Jake Fisher of Sports Illustrated reported that the Suns, Pelicans, and Pistons were apparently involved in some three-way trade talks that have since died. But just to give you a sense of what the parameters were, Detroit would have gotten Eric Bledsoe. The Pelicans would have gotten Reggie Jackson. Phoenix would have gotten a 2019 first-round pick from Detroit, a 2018 first-round pick from the Pelicans, and then the contract of Alexis Ajinkta and Omer Asik as well. Mort, who do you think should have said no to that deal?
Yeah.
If any of them. Someone, or do you think it should have gone through? Like, do you like it for all three teams?
I'm definitely nervous because, you know, before we started recording, you and I talked about it very briefly, and you know, the fact that New Orleans would be giving up a pick is troublesome because we just don't know where they are yet. That pick might come in handy. And they are not the ones getting Eric Bledsoe. They would be getting Reggie Jackson. Now, on the flip side, they would give up Ajinkta and Asik, getting two large contracts off the books and replacing that contract slot with Jackson, who is, you know, objectively considerably more productive than those two. So that's a plus, but that would be a lot of guards for the Pelicans, whereas what they really would need was a three-man. So if that had been Tobias Harris instead, then we could have talked.
Yeah.
But yeah, so from that perspective, New Orleans should probably say no. I'm also kind of, you know, surprised Phoenix being able to get two first round draft picks for Eric Bledsoe, given that the market we're seeing from significantly better players getting traded this summer for virtually nothing. I mean, good on you, Phoenix, if you get that, but wow, I wouldn't give up on that.
Yeah, I mean, they would be accepting a salary dump as well.
Asik, so, Ajinkta, yeah.
So it's
but like they're not going anywhere, so
right. Yeah, that's exactly how rebuilding teams should use their cap space. And we don't know, also, there might, you know, one or both of those teams may have been trying to put protections on the pick, so maybe that's where talks broke down as well. We just don't know. I mean, it seems like they didn't get far enough for, you know, Woj or Shams or anyone to start breaking down details, but I think Woj did tweet the Suns and Pistons who were involved in trade talks, so it's at least something worth keeping an eye on. Sarah, if you were, let's say it's just Suns and Pistons, would you do a swap straight up of Reggie Jackson for Eric Bledsoe?
I mean, I think the Pistons would do that. I suppose Phoenix, being that they seem to want to move on, yeah, I guess they both would do it. Back to the original trade, though, I mean, I'm like you guys. Do you think it really makes sense? I guess it just really depends. But, you know, obviously you're giving up picks. But I also just think Reggie Jackson, you know, granted, Jameer Nelson's not your point guard for the future, but he's been playing really, really well for them. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that, you know, do they really have faith that Reggie Jackson would be their point guard of the future either? So is it worth giving up the picks for it?
I mean, that, yeah, I'm with you guys in thinking the Pelicans, yes, the, you know, assuming it's a completely unprotected pick, it would be smart of them to get out of those two contracts.
Right.
But Reggie Jackson, like, swapping those two for Reggie Jackson makes no tangible difference on their cap space next year. Like, his contract is the same size as both of theirs combined. So they're still in cap hell because they still have Drew signed for $25 million a year, Anthony Davis for over $25 million a year, Solomon Hill still on the books, Reggie Jackson would be at $17 million. Assuming they re-sign Boogie, that's it. Like, they still aren't building out. They don't have the money to get anyone else. So,
And that's why that wouldn't matter if they got, like, a difference maker at the wing slot instead of a point guard. Like, it doesn't matter if a team is in cap hell as long as that money's allocated correctly. But getting Jackson in there is just not doing it wisely. That would be a wrong way to, like, say, you know, we are substituting this salary slot to a point guard. Well, you got Drew Holiday. You got each one more who's, you know, can play both guard spots. You have, you know, Jameer Nelson. I was just forgetting his name. You have Ian Clark who can play the two as well. Like, you need a small forward.
Right. Yeah.
Like, well, who's your small forward? Though. Right, Rondo.
Yeah.
And Tony Allen as well. Like, they are just loaded with guards. They need a legitimate three man, a clear cut three man. So if this trade had centered around Tobias Harris, would then let me ask you guys that: if Tobias Harris had been the guy coming back to New Orleans, would you have made the deal if you were the Pelicans?
With a completely unprotected first round pick?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's risky, right?
I don't think the Pelicans are... They're not going to make the playoffs.
But it would have made easier to swallow, though, if it had been Harris.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
But
for
why
sure.
would Detroit do it, though?
Right. No, I get that. It was just solely for, you know...
Gotcha.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Back to Ryan's hypothetical. Sorry, I jumped off of that. I'm assuming Phoenix would want more for Bledsoe. But I guess it just depends how much they just want to get rid of him at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it seems like if they could get anything of value for him, they will. They're just waiting for a tangible contract or a tangible trade offer that's not like 2 second-round picks or like a top 25 protected first-round pick.
You know, while we're on the subject of this trade and the Pelicans who were involved with this, I just want to address something. Like, a lot of people are looking at the, you know, the Boogie AD pairing and going, oh, that's never going to work. Mm-hmm. You know, those two are actually functioning very, very well.
Yes.
So if those two are broken up at any point, it shouldn't be about, oh, they couldn't make it work. It should be all about, you know, the Pelicans not being able to put the right team around them. Mm-hmm. I have been so impressed with the way Boogie and Brow have played together. I mean, Boogie has just taken over this, you know, playmaking role. He's averaging 6 assists a game along with 14 rebounds, 2 blocks and 29 points.
Yeah.
Davis is at 27.5, 12 rebounds, 2 blocks as well. They are playing so damn well together. It's a shame that they couldn't get like that third or fourth guy in there. And that should be the focus of it if that is broken up. Because credit to those two.
100% agree. Yeah, I mean, it really sucks. Like, I understand why they want to get off of those two contracts because, like, yeah, Mort, as you said, if they can flip it for, if they can flip that those two and get a wing in return, like, that team is set up well, assuming you can re-sign DeMarcus. But, like, I still think you're most likely not making the playoffs just because there are so many good teams in the West. And if DeMarcus leaves, like, you need to start thinking about Anthony Davis' future in New Orleans if DeMarcus leaves. Like, if they can't retain DeMarcus Cousins, what incentive does Anthony Davis have to stay there except for he signed for 2 or 3 more years?
Yeah. No, it's a situation they put themselves in. They, by giving out bad dollars like to right. guys who should have Solomon Hill contract again. I know yeah. I've mentioned it a ton, but it's just such a concern. He's not giving them anything, and you know, you have a Sheik there, a Jinga as well. Like, ugh. Here's the one thing I would say, though. Drew Holiday is not performing to the level that I kind of expected him to, given the money that he got. I would mm-hmm. like to see a little bit more out of him. Like,
yeah.
13.9 points a game on 13.2 shots. 1.7 free throw attempts per game. You know, dear Drew, they paid your ass. Step up, dude.
Right. I mean, it's tough. Like, you have... It just... The whole team feels very disjointed. Because as you said, like, Boogie and Brow are both killing it. But then it's kind of just like a roulette wheel. For like,
yeah.
will anyone step up tonight? And you spin the wheel. And it's like, well, no. Or random player A or B. Like, Jameer Nelson has had like one or two out of nowhere games. Like, Drew has a couple explosions. Dante Cunningham out of nowhere hits a three or two every once in a while. But it's like, there isn't a single guy aside from Boogie and Brow who you can dependably count on every night, which sucks. Like, it's just, it speaks to like kind of the problem with roster construction, especially around, if you don't have, like, if you're building around three max contract players, you need all three of those guys to show up every night. And, you know, they didn't really have a choice in terms of retaining Drew or not. Like, if they let him walk, they weren't going to have enough cap space to replace him with anyone good. Yep. But you have to wonder if they're not having buyer's remorse already about that contract, or if they're going to in the future. You know, nothing against Drew. Like, he's a fine player. But when you've got guys, you know, on these old cap deals, especially when you've got Reggie Jackson earning $80 million, when you got Eric Bledsoe, I think he's at like $70 million, $125 yep. for Drew. It's just, you know, things will balance out over the next couple of years once everyone gets on these new cap contracts. But for the time being, like, Drew Holiday is their highest paid player this year. It's just, you know, and again, they've got $94 million already signed away next year, not factoring in DeMarcus Cousins. Like,
yeah,
they're stuck, basically. They're going to have, if you can retain Boogie, you get the mid-level exception to find yourself a suitable wing player.
Imagine if they had signed Seth Curry last summer.
Oh, instead of the Mavericks?
Yeah.
Yeah. But then what do you do with Drew? Because they think he's better at the two-guard spot.
I mean, look, that would have been something they could have figured out. I mean, I'm just saying, at this point, the money they've given up for the talent that they have, that does yeah. not really compute.
Yeah. It just sucks. And I hope that they can figure out a way to get a real wing player in there. Solomon Hill, is he out for the whole year? Or is he coming back at some point?
I'm actually not sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
I know he's out at least for a couple
months. It's uncertain if he will return sometime in February. Oh, okay. According to Basketball Reference. So you're saying Josh Smith isn't the answer?
Right. Like, that's... I mean, that's what sucks. Like, they don't have... It feels kind of similar to the Cavs, where it's like, the Cavs don't have anyone that's going to fix this on defense, so you got to make a trade. Like, the Pelicans don't have anyone who's going to fix their three spot. Like, Dante Cunningham is not going to turn into... It's not going to be like, oh, all of a sudden he is really good and he's going to be your every night small forward. He's going to put up a consistent 12 to 15 points. It's just, you need someone, even if Brown and Boogie continue performing at the level that they are, which I think they will, you just need someone to be that consistent third option, or you're going to have these nights where, even though those two, like, there was a game, I forget what game it was, but there was a game where those two went off for like 60 plus points, 30 rebounds, 8 blocks, 8 threes, yep. and they lost.
Yeah, I remember that one. That was ridiculous.
Like,
what but is there a trade out there? Is there a trade out there that would make the Pelicans significantly better and more specifically more streamlined in terms of their starting lineup? Is there a forward on the market that they could realistically get through trade? And let's assume that we're also opening up the possibility of moving the 18 pick.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I'm looking across the league, I'm not seeing like a slam dunk deal.
Right. Yeah, for that pick, probably not. I would say like a guy like Will Barton, but I don't think you move the pick for him because he's going to be a free agent.
Right. But he's intriguing at least. Like he would be able to play like that wing spot.
Right. Like he would be a market upgrade over what they're rolling out. But I for that pick, like you have to assume that pick is going to be in the lottery, possibly top 10. So it's got to be.
What about TJ Warren?
They just re-signed him to an extension.
I know, but they have Josh Jackson waiting in the wings.
Yeah, I was surprised. I honestly did not see that coming. But yeah, I mean, if for whatever reason, I know TJ Warren just suffered a head injury Friday, so knock on wood, he's actually first and foremost okay, because he had that one last year that sidelined him for a month. And
oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah,
so that's a returning, yeah, okay.
Right, so let's hope First of all, let's hope he's fine to, you know, recover quickly. But, yeah, I mean, that would be a guy, actually, that I'd be intrigued by. And would you give up that pick for him, though? If you could dump one of those salaries and get the pick.
I would give up the pick for Josh Jackson.
Oh, well, yeah.
I mean, and I'd give up more than that, but I mean, I'm not sure I'm giving up the pick for TJ Warren. With protection on it, like you said, probably, but it had to be like the right protection.
Like top, what protection would you want? Top
7.
Yeah, that seems reasonable, actually.
Yeah.
Cause
top seven, because the draft is like five to six men deep.
I was going to say it's way early to already be, you know, projecting the draft class and figuring out.
Well, right, but there are always, like, a couple who stands out, right? Yeah.
Like, right. The top tier guys, it seems like it's there's a clear cut top 5 or 6. And then after that, there will be values, obviously, because there always are. But those, like, really, truly elite, like Doncic, Porter, Bagley, Ayton, Bamba. After that, it's like Miles Bridges, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting. So we'll keep an eye on just general Pelicans trade rumors, Phoenix and Bledsoe, all that good stuff moving forward. I'm sure just a reminder that the deadline, or not deadline, but players who signed as free agents can't be traded until December 15th. So that may open things up. Eric Bledsoe may remain in purgatory until then, unfortunately. But hopefully we'll see some action there in the coming weeks. Let's wrap things up, as always, with our crush segment. And these are players who deserve more attention than they're getting in the national limelight. Sarah, I'm going to start with you. Who is your crush of the week?
Domantas Sabonis.
Nice. That was a good one.
Yeah. He's looked really good to start the year. Unfortunately, he didn't have a great outing against his former team in OKC, which I'm sure, you know, he would have liked to have. But, you know, and the team as a whole has been up and down to start the year, but they've mostly been kind of a pleasant surprise. They've already beat the Timberwolves, the Spurs, the Cavs. He's averaging a double-double. He's shown that, you know, he can finish off the roll. He can hit the mid-range jump shot. He's hit A3 so far. There's a possibility there that he can even be a bit of a stretch big. He has a really nice two-man game developing with Oladipo. He's passed the ball well. They're putting him in position where he gets to do a lot of handoffs, but he also kind of gets to play make a little bit from the elbow sometimes. So he just looks like a nice all-around player. Happy for him, especially since, you know, last year both he and Oladipo didn't really I don't know, I'll say they got a little bit of the short end of the stick in their situation. But I also, along with Sabonis, I just wanted to shout out as my crush the entire Sixers team.
Hey!
Because, let's see, let's look for the stat from The Athletic, Rich Hoffman. Oh, Sixers man. Are over 500 for the first time since November 9th, 2013. So, congratulations, Sixers. Well done.
If Brian was in charge of our salaries, he'd give you a raise immediately.
I mean, that's just the saddest stat ever. You're above 500 for the first time in 4 years. I feel like a Jacksonville Jaguars fan right now.
It is amazing.
Yeah. Yes, thank you for shouting them out. That was, I mean, if they didn't have that meltdown against Houston, they'd be riding a six-game winning streak right now. It's like they pissed away that game, and then they were like, okay, let's never lose a close game again. So they have somehow conjured some late-game magic for the last couple of games. It's been nice to see. Mort, I already know who your crush is, so go ahead.
He's been averaging 20.8 points per game over the last four, with a in just 27.8 minutes, mind you, so his production is insane. He's been stepping up defensively. He's been efficient from the field. My boy, Donovan Mitchell. So, yeah. I mean, you can laugh at me all you want about my Donovan Mitchell love, but he's been proving my ass right for at least four games now.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he none of us ever said he was going to be bad. We just
no, I did. He, yeah, right.
Your rookie of the year, Donovan Mitchell, was what we made
brother. Hey, it's still alive, Brian. It's early. If he keeps on doing this, yeah. But
is Ben Simmons going to break his foot again?
Oh, let's hope not. That was just me.
Yeah.
But I actually have another crush, and that's Andre Drummond's free throw shooting.
Yes. That's a good one.
And you know what's funny? About a year ago, I actually had that same crush because he was doing... Yeah. Mm-hmm. And immediately after I had that, his free throw shooting went into the shitter. Oh, so no. Consider this an experiment.
Oh, no. All right, why would you do this to him?
Because I just want to see how much power I actually have.
Is this because he spurned you that one time?
No. No, that was his publicity team. But I like Drummond, so I'm just testing out my powers X-Men style here to see if I have any sway. So I'm gonna compliment him for hitting, Jesus, damn near 78% on four attempts a game. Yeah. So, you know, we talked about most valuable player, and we mentioned Danny Green and stuff like that because he began to dribble the basketball, actually.
Mm-hmm.
If Andre Drummond makes this kind of leap from a free throw shooting perspective, like, should he also be in the conversation just because he fixed such a weak part of his game?
I mean, not only that, but it's going to enable him to be on the floor in late game situations, whereas before Stan Van Gundy would pull him off because he didn't feel comfortable until the last 2 minutes of the game. He had 14 of 16 Friday night, like a career night from the line. I mean, it seems to be a real thing. I don't want, unlike you, Mort, I don't want to jinx it because I have.
Oh, I don't want to. I'm just testing a little bit.
I have him on my fantasy team at work, and I would really like him to continue surprising because he's actually been one of the best fantasy basketball bodies of the year so far. He always fell because his free throw shooting was so bad, but like he was always a top 25 player aside from the free throw shooting, and now he's actually hitting his free throws, so it's been great to see. I mean,
only
frankly,
missed eight.
Yeah, it gives hope for like all of these big guys who are troubled at the line. Like, it's not... It's not a complete lost cause. Like, Shaq and Dwight Howard don't have to be the rule. Like, maybe Andre Drummond is the exception, but maybe it's a sign that, you know, with... He's talked about not only, like, you know, he did, like, the VR training and things like that, but it sounds like a lot of it was mental. And, you know, maybe NBA teams are just getting more advanced with the sports psychology side of things. So maybe... Moving forward, a guy like Clint Capela as well could start knocking down 60 to 70% of his freebies. Maybe Markel Fultz. Wasn't
he already doing that?
He was, like,
to start the season, he was pretty hot starting the season, at least.
Yeah, he was to start. I don't know. I mean,
he's at 80.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, hell, maybe Markel Fultz could actually hit a couple free throws. Who knows? Prayers up.
I'm not going to comment on that one.
Yeah, please don't make me. Everyone should read Ken Berger's piece, by the way, a Bleacher Report. He has one about Markel Fultz and just kind of what a shit show this whole thing is. So we're not going to talk about it again because we dove in length on Tuesday. But read Berger's piece and be nice to Sixers fans on Twitter. My crush, going back to the Sixers, I have to shout out JJ Redick because, you know, the Sixers caught a lot of crap for giving him so much money on a one-year, $23 million deal. It's early, but damn, he is worth every penny so far. It's just, it is unreal to see this team, not only with, like, a consistent three-point shooter, because Robert Covington is also, I mean, he's hitting almost 50% of his threes. But Redick, I mean, especially against the Pacers on Friday night, he went 8 of 12 from deep. One of them was just the most off-balance, horrendous-looking shots you could imagine. Just, like, shot clock was winding down. He was trapped behind two defenders, and he kind of just dove to the right and took the shot and nails it and did, like, the MJ shrug afterward. I mean, pairing him and Covington with Simmons and Embiid, I'm telling you guys, if you haven't watched the Sixers yet, they are a fun bunch this year. Their defense is horrendous right now. And my wife, Alex, and I were watching the Pacers game last night. And she's like, Joel Embiid looks like he's about to die out there. Like, he's so...
And she's a doctor.
Yeah, right. Right. So she had some, like, warning flags about how, I guess, you know, he has said he's out of shape. But, yeah, he's still working his way back. So hopefully their defense improves as the year goes on. But, I mean, the Sixers, for the last 4 years, have been the most offensively inept team in the NBA by far. This year, you know, they're not good by any means, but they're 18th right now. So, kudos to Brian Colangelo for getting Redick in. Kudos to Brett Brown for working him into the system and just unleashing him as a three-point shooter. It's just been so much fun to see. So... yeah, there we just had to get that one in there.
I'm kind of surprised people were down on the signing based on the 1 year salary, because he was the fourth member of that team in LA. You know, we all called it a big three. That was a big four. Yeah. He was draining 200 triples a year for him and just allowing Chris and Blake and DeAndre to play the way that they did. So I was never on board, you know, the anti Redick trade, and I never got it then, and I certainly don't get it now. And if people are still on it, jump off that one and get on board on the actual Redick train, because dude is a sniper, and he's even playmaking a little bit more this year. That caught my eye. He's starting to actually set guys up. He didn't do that in LA. Like, he was the designated shooter. Like, he was the guy you ran plays for. Now when he gets the ball, and he's actually making decisions now more than he did before. Like, I looked it up. His assist rate has doubled, or his assist percentage has more than doubled, and his turnover percentage remains the same. Like, that's considerable.
Yeah. I mean, the Sixers as a whole, their passing and ball movement has just been sublime. Like,
yeah, yeah. Really
is. Molly Sullivan, she was saying it's on the post-game broadcast, so, and I'm going to screw it up, so I don't want to... Don't take me for my word, but I think she said the Sixers on Friday became the third team. I think it was Houston and Golden State were the other two, or it might have been San Antonio, Sarah. I'm not 100% sure, but the only two teams, or the only three teams now, that have had 30 or more assists in back-to-back games. Like, I mean, again, Ben Simmons is my perma-crush. I'm not going to ever nominate him as my crush of the week, because that's just not fair, but... he is my permanent crush of the week, of the year. There, it's just, he breathed so much life into this team that, I mean, the Sixers lead the league in passes made per game right now, and they're second in assists per game. It's just, it's been fun. So yeah, check out a Sixers game. See JJ Redick bombing away from deep. It's we'll see how they fare. They've got a rough upcoming stretch, so we'll see just how seriously it take them. So that's actually going to do it for this episode of the NBA podcast. Just a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find all of our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We love any feedback. And you can find us this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports, and for their NBA content at FanRag NBA. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined by Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. Have a good one, you two.
You too, Brian.
You too.